From Johannesburg to Jerusalem, the world is always changing, growing and innovating. Join Benji Shulman for the next hour as he brings you the trendsetters, the thought leaders and those creating news before it happens. Only on the New Blue Review, your favorite Jewish culture and current affairs show. Every Monday at 9 a.m. right here on 101.9 High FM.
You're listening to 101.9 High FM. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is your show on this pre-Sukkot Monday morning. Hope you're doing very, very well out there and have all of your sukkah supplies sorted and ready for the holidays coming up. But before you do go on holiday, you're going to have to listen to us for the next hour, and I hope that you do, because it's going to be a cracker show as always. We're talking about a few things, including some stuff you may have never heard about with Miriam McKeba. We're talking about this hostage deal and what it might mean, and we will also be speaking about the future of the station and where it is going from here. Yeah, but before we do all of that, a few months ago, we had in studio Frankie Koda, who is part of the Sandringham High School Alumni Association, and he was talking to us about what was going on at the school, what had happened, and what things were being done to fix it. And as a result of that show and a lot of other work that's been done, there's been some great improvements. So we thought we'd get Frankie back on and into the studio to chat to us about progress. Frankie, thank you so much for joining us on 101.9 High FM. Great to have you back.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Benji. It's a great honor to be here and to speak to your listeners.
Yeah, so there's so much to talk about. But I wanted to start off with something that came actually as a direct result of the conversation that we had a few months ago. It just tells you how great our High FM listeners are, because one of the people who was listening was a guy called Daryl from Burgess Plumbing, and he actually got in contact with you to start looking at the issue of the bathrooms. Can you talk to us about that?
Yes, I mean, you know, one of the biggest challenges is, at Sandringham has always been the upkeep and maintenance of the facilities. I can give you some shocking stats. I mean, the school's home to 1,200 learners. At the time, you know, there was only about maybe of a ratio of 13 to 1 bathrooms that were available and working. And so when I was last on the show, it was a godsend that sort of Daryl reached out. And from that, a great partnership has come about. So the Alumni Association, together with Daryl, have undertaken to restore two sets of ablution facilities specifically for males and females, and also two facilities for teachers, male and female. I mean, this not to be scoffed at, but it's a 650,000 rand worth of sponsorship and collaboration between the private sector and the Sandringham Alumni Association. And yeah, we're eternally grateful. So the work is currently underway. I think by the end of October, fingers crossed and a bit of pressure on Daryl, I think the kids at Sandringham will have a full set of new bathrooms.
And it's a super interesting, I saw that Burgess made this like video of you guys, the work that you're doing and to do the bathrooms. And there's like waterless facilities, and they're putting in proper stainless steel stuff so that it's harder to break. You know, it's basically there for the long haul.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that everything that we're trying to do on the ground is predominantly around changing culture, changing the mentality of the kids, getting to appreciate. And Daryl sort of at the forefront has always said, like, we should give these kids a high-end feel. You know, they deserve to feel like this is a place where it's safe. They've got great ablutions. And so we're future-proofing things. The idea, I mean, like all things, you know, Sandringham is undergoing a massive transformation. And with that comes about security, ensuring that the premises is safe and secure, kids are safe and secure. You'll see CAP is full-time on the ground. I mean, this has come from the EduSafe initiative. The idea is to future-proof the school and to build something that can withstand any sort of trauma and, you know, build above and beyond.
Incredible. So that's just one of the good outcomes that came and good outcomes that have come through. Really the partnerships that I think you were looking for in order to improve things at the school. So that's on the toilet side, but you've been working on a number of other elements of what's going on. So talk to us about what else there is.
Yeah, so I think what's been the real catalyst for change at the school has been the launch of The Den, which is a fully functional fitness CrossFit / HYROX gym. It's, you know, we took over the old gymnasium block. We've completely renovated it. There's a fully functional gym there. And it's led the way for change at the school. I mean, there's not a day that it's not a pit stop for the Department of Education, the mayor of Joburg often pops in. So it really has become sort of the epicenter where people come and just see what's possible. And I think, you know, if more private sector, more alumni get involved, I mean, this is just one of many projects I undertake. And sort of what this catapulted into was the sort of the forward motion of the Alumni Association. So there's always been a dedicated team of alumni, people that have been pushing the Factum Non-Verbum agenda and sort of been really trying to get momentum.
So you're talking inside Sandringham speak there. What is Factum Non-Verbum?
So I've got to pull myself back. I keep reminding everyone that our color is teal. So if anyone's a Sandringham alumni, you'll know that our blood is teal. And then Factum Non-Verbum, which is the school motto, which really stands for the deed, not the word. So I think, you know, we've finally established the Alumni Association. We're a registered company. We're a registered NPO. We've got a dedicated bank account. We will be in the process of being able to issue Section 18 soon. So the team has really grinded exceptionally hard over the last 4 months. I mean, it would be hard to sort of thank everyone on a personal level, but you all know who you are. They've absolutely worked to the bone. And from that, we've got our first alumni launch event, which will take place on the 6th of November at Sandringham High School in the Den, or the gymnasium, for those that remember it. 5:30, head over, or just pop us an email, alumni@sandringhamhighschool.co.za. We'll forward you the RSVP link. All you got to do is arrive at 5:30 for a school tour, and then 6 o'clock afterwards, we'll have some light canapes, there'll be a cash facility, and then, yeah, we'll do a full launch.
Okay, so that's great. So, you know, as you said, the Alumni Association has been around for a while, but it's good to see that it's formalized. People can really feel comfortable that if they make a donation or if they get involved, that there is a structure there behind it, not just you know, someone in a fax machine. So that is really cool, and I'm glad to see that there will be the launch at the Den. I want to talk a little bit more about some of the partnerships and how you spoke about EduServe and all of that sort of thing, and what their model is, because, you know, Sandringham's a big school and there's a lot to do, and I'd like, you know, and some of the stuff has just really been a lot about maintenance. So that's all coming up just after the break. We're talking to Frankie Coda today on 101.9 Chai FM, following up on his good work that he is doing with the Sandringham Alumni Association at Sandringham High School.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
101.9 Chai FM. I'm Benji Shulman. This is the New Blue Review, and in studio we have Frankie Coda. What is your official bottle washer, chairman, head of everything at the Sandringham Alumni Association? I don't know if you have an official title, but the man getting the stuff done at Sandringham High School at the moment. Now, Frankie, before the break, we sort of spoke about some of the things that you're redoing, but really some of it is just actual maintenance of the general school, getting stuff back up to scratch about where it should be, the pool, the painting. Maybe talk to us a little bit about some of those things that are the more day-to-day stuff that's going on.
So, I mean, core to this has been the EduSafe partnership. So, I mean, just in a quick nutshell, EduSafe is a partnership between sort of private and government. With the, you know, Department of Education, CAP is on board, and then obviously the EduSafe team, which sort of has enabled us to propel some of this work that's been going in. So you would have seen, I mean, the radio members would have seen that the fences have been painted. We're starting to get the teal color back. The grass and the perimeter of the school has been trimmed and neatened up. There aren't any overgrown trees in the bottom area. The trees have been cut back. So a lot of effort has been put into sort of restoring the school from an aesthetical perspective. And then the idea is to roll this out into a maintenance plan that the groundskeepers at the school can obviously take over and continue. The CAP Green Team will forever be a support structure along with CAP security. So if anyone knows, if you look at the main gates, they're secured by CAP. CAP Green's on the ground working with the school teams. And the idea is that all of these additional ad hoc resources enable the school to build a proper maintenance plan and be able to tackle things by themselves. Like all things, you know, there's been years of decay. It's going to take a bit of a jump start to get things going, but we're on a really good wicket. I mean, the perimeter fence is looking amazing, you know, with the balance coming, new front gates installed. The school's about to get this is actually a partnership we can speak about, is JoJo's come to the party. We're going to be deploying tankers to the school to store reserve water, because if anyone knows, if a school goes without water for a day, the school needs to be discharged. I mean, the kids can't be there. So in the next coming days, we'll be able to store about, I think it's 4,000, probably about 16,000 liters of water. So this keeps kids in school for 3 days, you know, if there's a water outage in the area.
I mean, talking about water, I mean, the Sandringham High School pool was always an amazing place with, when they did galas, and it's, I mean, it's pretty fully sized. It's not Olympic, but it's not small either. And for many years, it became a giant tropical fish pond.
Yeah.
So pools are hard. I mean, it's a lot of work, a lot of maintenance. So how are you handling that?
Yeah, so the pool pretty much falls into the ambit of control of the den. I mean, I might be jumping a little bit here, but the team, so Lauren and Danny from the pool team, we've had some really great conversations with them. They're very eager to show their commitment to Sandringham High School. So we're in the process of finally restoring the pool. So the full German pool area will have a fresh look. The pool will be renovated. We're sort of hoping that by middle of November, we'll have a brand new clean blue pool with lanes. It'll be managed service. So a big shout out to the pool team for really just, coming out of nowhere. They're like, we want to be a part of this transformation. A big shout out to Lauren and Danny.
Okay, that's a really interesting model. The fact that you have a kind of private enterprise there, because the thing about a pool at school is that between 8 and 12, it's not really used in a school setting because the kids are studying and in class and all of that. So is your idea that the den will be able to use it at times when the kids are not able to, as a way of making the asset work?
Yes, I mean, we haven't really bedded down the commercial construct of the pool. I mean, that would be one of the sort of low-hanging fruits, is to find a way of commercializing it so that the school in some form can benefit, whilst it's empty. But at the core of why we're doing this is to get kids water ready. Mm. We've had a lot of private members come out and say, we want to teach your kids how to swim, and that remains the core. 50% of the school kids come from Alexandra. A lot of them are prone to swimming in rivers and whatnot. And our goal is just to be able to get kids to swim to a wall in case there's an emergency. Mm-hmm. So over and above the fact that this will commercially add value to the school, the core imperative focus is that kids must be able to swim. Yeah, must be prepared to swim. So whichever route we go, whichever partnership we take on, it will be mandatory that they teach the kids how to swim.
Amazing, amazing. Now, I remember, if you ever watched the movie Matilda, what was it called, Miss Truncheon or something, she says, her best idea of a school is one where there's no kids at all, right? Which is always, it's a very funny line, but it is kind of the heart of it. We were talking about pools and fences and toilets, but at the end of the day, the kids are what matter in making a school work, because without them, there is no school. And I'm interested to hear how they are taking to this renewed interest in the school, particularly from the perspective of what they're supposed to be doing, which is studying so that they can learn.
I mean, Sandringham kids are resilient. These kids are resilient. I mean, when we say our blood is teal, it really is teal. Like we're all about Sandringham. And I think what's been really special is these kids haven't had much for the last, call it 10 years, right? But they've really sort of taken to these changes. They've really adopted them. What's amazing to see is, if you walk through the passages, it's good morning, sir, good afternoon, sir. Blazers are on, shirts are tucked in. Yes, there'll be some exceptions, right? So, I mean, we're not oblivious to what the community thinks, hears, and sees, and we've heard them vocalize. But overall, the kids are turning the tide. Mr. Pascal Ricotto, the principal, he is a phenomenal leader. I mean, there are not enough words to praise that gentleman. He's also backed by an incredible SGB, school governing body, Dustin and the team. If anyone knows, I mean, the kids are on school holiday right now. They shouldn't be at school, but the kids are there. They're doing extra lessons. They'll be there the whole week. There's night vigils. I mean, the kids are studying at night. So, I mean, Pascal's focus is predominantly just academic, and he's entrusted us with sort of the nuts and bolts around him. But he's made it adamant that he wants to get Sandringham back to 100% pass rate, and he's set himself a trajectory or a goal of next year to be at that 100%.
Which is it's so crucial. The truth is, Sandringham always had so many different opportunities to grow, as a kid's, whether it was in cultural or sports. But at the end of the day, you do need to get the key thing is the academics first, right? And when it went through the really bad phase, there was that pass rate went to 82% or 85%. It's
46 or thereabouts.
Oh, even worse. So, I mean, that's really shocking. So So that really has to be your first metric is can, as you say, get that pass rate back up. And then the quality of the passes, right? We don't, no disrespect to people doing math literacy, but, you know, at the end of the day, we want to see those STEM subjects. We want to see higher grade, as they used to call it, in math and science and English and whatever, so that the kids can really have the opportunity to compete in the 21st century.
Yeah, you know, Pascal, obviously, I think he's a, if, I think by trade, he's a science teacher. So very much maths and science is at the forefront of everything he does. But again, you know, as we get the kids seeing the changes, being a part of the change, having clean halls, you know, school that's litter free, inevitably, you'll see that the culture will shift and the kids will want to be part of something bigger. I just can't echo enough the efforts that Pascal's put in. You know, he's there. He's there on a Sunday morning. He's doing work. You know, this is a principle that goes above and beyond. And we as alumni, like we're super happy to back Pascal and the SGB. And we want to bring Sanrin back to its former glory. And I think that's why we're so all heavily invested.
There's quite a cute story that I saw somewhere on this thing, which I thought was so interesting. At the period in which things were not going so well, there was a very good head boy at the school, and there was an incident. I can't really remember it. I recorded it once with him, and as a result, they didn't allow him to be the head boy. I think he was exposing some of the corruption in the earlier problems, and as a result, he wasn't the head boy. And then they just stopped putting the head boy down on the boards, right? Yeah. And there's like golden letters. So you actually have a project to restore that and all the kids who came after him to actually, you know, recognize that they were in fact the head boy of the school, which I thought was lovely.
Yeah, so this is one of the theories that I've always enjoyed hearing Rob from EduSafe say is, you know, a successive measure for a school is really the academic boards, the pool and the facilities. And so when he mentioned it, sort of sparked like, you know, let's walk to the hall and let's go look at these boards. And some of these boards haven't been updated for many a year. And so the alumni has been on a big drive to try to find some of the people or some of the prefects and some of the head boys that were in those missing years. So again, if you are a prefect or a head boy that his name's not on the board, please feel free to reach out. So yeah, our goal is to try update those boards, bring them back. I mean, naturally, there'll be some of the boards which will be decommissioned, but or not so not so to speak, they'll just be not updated. Things like tennis, so some of the sports will obviously not be updated, but where we can, where it's important to acknowledge, it's things like head boys, RCL heads, people that have made a significant change.
So actually it's interesting you talk about tennis, because we have a message here from Sue Jackson. By the way, if you want to ask Frankie any questions or myself, please feel free. 061-895-1019 is the line, and you can send us a message. And Sue Jackson has sent us a message saying, wonderful news, the pupils deserve the best. Are the tennis courts going to be repaired? Because obviously I think you can see the tennis courts kind of from the street, so it's one of those things that I think people notice.
Yeah, so the short answer is at present, they're not a top priority. Obviously getting some of the basic infrastructure stuff like the building, the roofing, et cetera, addressed is a key priority. We've had several discussions with community members around, you know, or willing funders around what happens with the pools. And so there's been a couple of ideas, sort of none have come to fruition. But the idea is, you know, if it makes sense for the students of Sandringham, if the kids can start partaking in tennis again and there's tennis between the surrounding GD schools, and sure, then that's something we can look at restoring. Just to give your listeners a rough idea, to repair one court, to repair those specific courts, we're looking at about 1.2 million rand.
Wow.
For a sport that might not be fully adopted, or they might not even be coaching staff for right now. So obviously the key priority is just to make sure that they're clean, the grass is cut back, the trees aren't growing excessively. And yeah, if there's any community members that would like to get involved or like to share ideas on how we can utilize tennis courts, please feel free to reach out. We'd be happy to have any conversation.
So let's talk then about, you talk about some of the infrastructure. That's not a top priority. So fine. So what is? So we're looking at the pools, the toilets are getting on their way, the kids are bought in. So what's next on the agenda?
Sure. So roofing, one of the key things that needs to be done at Sandringham is the repairing and sort of restoration of some of the corrugated roofing. The corrugated roofing in the passageway, if any of the students or past students remember, there used to be passageways with corrugated roofing that allowed you to get from class to class like getting rained on. Roofing is a serious challenge. We need to find a way of raising the funds, or if there's anyone in the community that's willing to assist, but we need to essentially either repair or replace the roofing across the entire school. It's probably been through about 10, 15 years of non-maintenance. There's rust. What happens with rust? There's leaks. Leaks starts to destroy the underlying infrastructure, so buildings become compromised. So roofing is one of those key projects that we could use everyone's assistance with. And then just, you know, structurally, I mean, the buildings are sound, but the classrooms are not in good shape. So one of the initiatives that the Sandringham Alumni Association is looking at is, we've named it, for a lack of a better word, a classroom in a box. The idea is that alumni can fund the restoration of a classroom. So we'll give you what it costs to bring it back to a good standard. So that includes paint, ceiling fans, overhead, projectors, a coat of paint, new desks or sanded desks, teachers' desks, filing cabinets. So we'll give you an inventory list of what this classroom will look like and what it will cost. And the various alumni or the community can choose to buy or share the cost of owning a classroom or outright buy the classroom. I mean, and then you can put a plaque above it that acknowledges that your contribution was the restoration of the classroom.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you have that, but like, thumb suck, what does it cost to have a classroom?
We're busy with that project as we speak. So we're actually building sort of a model of what it would cost. I mean, I would be very reluctant to give you a solid answer. But I mean, some of the smaller classrooms probably in the region of 12,000 to 18,000 Rand, and that's like a Rolls Royce classroom.
Right.
And then obviously we've got some of the bigger key ones like the...
What is a Rolls Royce classroom?
Well, science labs, you know, that requires a bespoke set of desks and chairs and equipment, etc. But yeah, I mean, we will obviously let everyone know what these come to. And I think it's a great initiative. I mean, it's a good way to put your name on the door, you know, so we will...
And especially now that you guys are set up to give 18 A's and whatever, yes, you know... this is a great way of really making sure that your tax money goes to the right place. And talking of tax money, I mean, bless them, the GDE didn't fill themselves with glory in the run-up to this thing with the way that they handled the school. Are they coming to the party and the government are doing what they're supposed to do?
The joy of having a coffee shop at the school is that that there's frequent traffic of these GD individuals. They are super proud of what the school has become. For a long time, it's been sort of a down-weighted school. You're sort of picking up the riff-raff. But the school, I mean, the GDA in totality has shown their support. They're very big supporters of Pascal, which is what matters most to us. If we don't have Pascal, we don't have Dustin. So Pascal, head of SMT, principal, Dustin, SGB, I don't think most of the things would be occurring at a ground level. So the GDE does play their role where they can, obviously support from a budgetary perspective. They're our partners at the end of the day. And the fact that they're aligned and they're seeing the positive contribution, it just makes them, you know...
Actually get in and get, do what they need to.
And like I said, I mean, they're frequently there at the gym having a coffee, working from there. So it's been pleasant to have them around.
And of course, you talk about the alumni, Frankie, and I'm sure he listens to this show every week. But people like Trevor Noah, that sort of thing, who were famous alumni. Have you started getting people coming in and saying, oh, you know, I'm seeing the changes I'm hearing, and how can I get involved?
Yeah, so I mean, there have been a few. There's a lot of very well-off Sandringham alumni, some which have kept very, very quiet. And some of them that have shown signs of wanting to get involved and eagerness. I think the underlying criteria was that there's an established vehicle for where their funds are going, and rightfully so, right? Like, you don't want to just plunge your money into an abyss. And so I think with us creating or registering a formal MPO with a formal bank account, being able to accept funds, they feel a bit more at ease knowing that an audited financial vehicle is controlling where these funds go. And our mandate is the school will give us priorities. We'll define, you know, we'll see which priorities we decide to support. And then we as the alumni are the ones that break ground. So we don't just hand the money over to the school and say, off you go. For lack of a better word, the school wants to build a new state-of-the-art facility. We'll source quotes. The alumni will actually be the ones that commissions the work and oversee it so that the money of the contributions are spent
in the correct
way. Yeah.
All right, amazing. So that's it. I mean, last time we had this discussion, We got new toilets. So if you are listening and you're a Sandringham alumni, or you're not a Sandringham alumni, but you want to make a difference in education, really in the backyard of the community of where the station is, you can hear you've got a group of committed people who are making a difference every day in the one thing that's going to make a difference in for the future of our country, which is to have good schooling. So it's an amazing initiative. And I think to start off with, maybe come to the opening of the association. Give us those details again, Frankie, and how people can attend.
Sure. So if you are a Sandringham alumni or a community member that wants to be involved, we're having our formal launch event on the 6th of November. From 5:30 to 6, there'll be a school tour. So we'll take whoever's there, we'll take them on a tour to show them, you know, obviously befores and afters, because we've got some of those now, but also see what the state of the school is. And then afterwards, 6 o'clock, we'll have a formal event, couple of speeches. There'll be some cocktails and canapes. There'll be coffee, etc., for sale. So that's it. If you want to reach out, if you want to attend, just email alumni@sandringhamhighschool.co.za. We'll forward you an RSVP link, and then you can obviously just RSVP for the event, so we know how many people to cater for.
Incredible, Frankie Coda from the Sandringham High School Alumni Association. Teal is blue. We appreciate your work, and we'll chat to you again soon.
Thanks for having us, Benji.
I'm Benji Shulman. This is 101.9 High FM.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
I'm Benji Shulman, and this is 101.9 High FM. You're listening to the New Blue Review, and I hope that you enjoyed that discussion with Frankie Coda and his team. Now, the other night, I was not sleeping so well, and I was just listening to some stuff on the internet and just chilling and relaxing, and I happened upon this remarkable story, and it was so interesting for me to hear what this was, because I had missed this part and I thought it was a fascinating piece of history. And it's particularly fascinating because at the moment we have a sort of dueling Mandela problem in Israel. On the one hand, you have Mandla Mandela, who is been accused of all sorts of horrific things, including things to do with spousal abuse, road rage incidents. He's met with all sorts of terrorist organizations. He dug up his family plot and moved I think the members of the Mandela grave site, actually he moved them to his own area. So it's he's quite a difficult human being, and quite he's quite revolting, actually, in terms of what he does. And he, of course, has been on this flotilla going to Gaza, and he's been arrested. But other members of the Mandela family have actually gone in with the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation have actually been giving out aid and actually dealing with this problem in an appropriate way. Manner. So it depends on what Mandela you're actually dealing with, and it's an interesting thing about who goes to Israel and why. And what was interesting for me, which brings us to this particular story, is that I was listening to this story about a family in Israel who was a famous family, and they did various different things, and the one family member. The family is called Shalev, and is a kind of a famous family of kibbutzniks and people who contributed to the state in different ways, and this the one guy was actually he was a musicologist, and he believed that Israel didn't have music connected to the land anymore. I mean, obviously there's plenty of Jewish music, but he wanted to create a sort of indigenous variety of music that really described the land around him. And he started creating these songs, which became very popular amongst youth movements and in the Zionist world and in the creation of the state. And they were sung by various people. And one of those people I discovered through this listening to the internet was Miriam Makeba, which is fascinating, right? So Miriam Makeba, she's sort of an icon of the struggle, and she was not allowed to come back to South Africa. She was kicked out, and she spent a long time in exile particularly in New York, with Harry Belafonte and a lot of the other sort of giants of the civil rights era and the civil rights and that sort of the jazz Harlem era of music, and she was there, and a lot of exiles that left from South Africa in the cultural sphere ended up in New York and immediately connected with the Jewish community there. And we have, if you look, like, for example, some of the drum writers who ended up in New York, they actually talk about their relationship with the Jewish community. And I had always known about this from the literary perspective, but I hadn't really thought about it so much from the musical one. And it turns out that actually Miriam Makeba became very close with the Jewish community, to the extent that she was doing a lot of singing in Yiddish and in Hebrew. And in 1963, even did a tour of Israel itself. And if you go onto the internet, you can actually find a picture of her landing at Ben Gurion Airport. And her songs became so popular that it actually became a bit of an issue for some people, because they she was playing in sort of different places. And after 67 and the Six-Day War, she was supposed to play an event where there were these Egyptian diplomats, and they said to her that they didn't want her to sing this song in Hebrew. And she refused, and she said, "I don't care, I'm going to sing the song." And apparently this caused somewhat of a scuffle, or a gefuffle rather, with Harry Belafonte, and caused some disruption in the relationship. And basically, she was a woman who was people kept trying to silence her entire career. You had the apartheid government, you had these Egyptian diplomats, Harry Belafonte. She married Stokely Carmichael, who was like the original very hardcore Black Panther type guy, and also sort of very anti-Semitic, whatever. And she didn't care about him either, and didn't listen to him, didn't listen to anyone. So she comes out with this very independent voice, and just kind of a remarkable remembrance, as we have all of these people that are going to Israel at the moment, some with better motivations and some with less, that once upon a time, Miriam Makeba brought people together by singing in Yiddish and Hebrew. And so I thought, let's play one of her songs to remember her. And this is called A Garden of Roses.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
101.9 Chai FM. We're seeing conflicting reports about whether, in fact, there is going to be a hostage deal in Israel. Some the Israelis have said that they're prepared to take the deal. Hamas has kind of said that they would, but then they sort of always leave out the bits that's difficult for them, like the giving up the arms, and they say they're still going to be involved in the Strip, which of course is a no-no as far as Israel is concerned. So it's going to be interesting to see where this goes, but hopefully there is at least an opportunity to get the hostages out. And it does seem to have been that the ability to get everyone on board from the Arab countries, particularly Qatar, is putting pressure on Hamas to actually do something, because maybe we start to see the end of the war. But we'll only really know that sort of after Sukkot, maybe. So let's see. Something we're definitely going to keep an eye on. And that's why you're seeing so much screaming, by the way, at the moment. You have every anti-Semite and his dog coming into South Africa at the moment. Jeremy Corbyn, and you've got Albanese, and you've got everyone at the moment just sailing, because they're desperately trying to make sure that this gets scuppered. So it's a very delicate and very interesting situation, which I hope will release end up in the release of the hostages. Now, I do just want to say, if you are a follower of Howard Feldman's Twitter account, which is, you know, really the only place to get news sometimes, even better than AR George, I saw that we're going to be changing some stuff up here at the station. Now, I just, you know, come on the Monday morning and do my thing and then leave, so I don't have any control or input at the station, but effectively, as you would have seen, Howard is going to be sort of taking over as the station manager and doing whatever Howard is going to be doing. And I think that it just gives us a moment to reflect on where the station has come from. I was one of the first people, one of the people who signed the petition that you initially needed to get ICASA to have a give a radio station back nearly more than it was probably like 20 years ago now. And the truth is that most startups of any kind don't last, like the sort of fail in the first 5 years, a huge number, like half, something like that. It's a very, very big number of startups fail. And so to get to 10 years, and in fact more than that, nearly 20, is a real, it's just quite amazing. And really has to, congratulations, they have to go out to Kathy for having had the idea for the station, run the station, created the station, and driven it forward. And I hope that with Howard taking over, that you will hear and learn about new things coming up as we go into the next phase of whatever the station is, because it really is completely unique. There are very, very few English-speaking Jewish radio stations in the world, and there's just actually very few Jewish stations in the world in general. So we're remarkable both internationally and locally. You don't hear anything on your radio dial in this country like Chai FM, and it's not just the Jewish content, it's the intellectual content, it's the cultural content, it's everything that makes you guys listen to me and everybody else on a Monday morning. And that is really fantastic. So brings us to the end of the show for today. Have a great Sukkot. Thank you to everyone who helps put the show together. Craig, who pushes all the big red buttons, Fusi on the sound, and to you, dear listener, who joins us every single week. Do join us again next week on the New Blue Review.